Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on the issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
So welcome to today's episode of New Cyber Frontier. Today I'm really excited. We have a special guest on, Harley D. Reinerson. And he said to include the D because it brings up conversations. And something about Harley Davidson there too, right?
My parents did not own a motorcycle.
Did not own a motorcycle.
I take that back. They did own a Riverside that they bought out of Montgomery Ward's for a short period of time.
All right. So, but Harley is with the Department of Homeland Security, and we have been trying to get him on for a long time because we want to hear from these agencies that really have a big impact on what is going on in the cyber world. And Harley is the cybersecurity advisor for Region 8, which, wow, covers the whole West, Colorado, Montana, North Dakota, South Dakota, Utah, Wyoming. You are a busy man on a lot of empty roads.
Yes.
So, Harley, first of all, introduce yourself. Give us your background. How did you get to be where you're at, working for the Department of Homeland Security?
So a little bit of background, I guess. Homeland Security, I basically grew up in South Dakota, went to Black Hills State for a year, and then University of South Dakota. Entered into the Army after there was no available funding, and kind of went through that. Spent about 22 plus years in the Army from J6, which is Communications Officer, SOC South, which is Special Operations Command South in Panama. Ended up going through the Pentagon for about 4 years. Came out here to Colorado as an IG, Inspector General, mm-hmm. and then turned over to the state, Rand Buckley Air Force Base, which was actually a Colorado National Guard base for about a year. Became their CIO, saw that the state needed some assistance. I became a state employee. I saw that the state needed some assistance in the cyber security realm, which we called information security. Cyber wasn't even really a term at that point in time. And then assumed the role of the chief information security officer for the state, went out, got a grant, about $1.2 million back in the 2003-04 time frame. So was competing for boots and suits at the time, so it was unusual that we got a cybersecurity grant. Mm-hmm. Utilized that to set up the information security program for the state. Was able to hire somebody to take my place, a guy named Mark Weatherford, who became the chief information security officer for California, and then went to NERC, which is the Northern Electrical Reliance Corporation, which runs the electrical grid.
Electric grid, yeah.
And then finally ended up, he went up as an undersecretary at Homeland Security. And he, which is interesting, is to a certain degree, he set this program up, and it was part parcel of developing that. So it mm-hmm. kind of came complete circle. So after the, I was the CIO from a Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, I went out as a commercial to, well, actually it's Denver Authority, but the Director of Compliance for DIA, Denver International Airport. Mm-hmm. And then that was the previous job to this one, which is the cybersecurity advisor.
Wow. So,
you asked.
Wow, that's quite the background. So give us, and literally, so many people are not familiar with what the Department of Homeland Security does. So give us a kind of a loop back understanding of what it is Department of Homeland Security does in the middle of the United States, and because I understand on the coasts, right? And what it is that the cyber department does exactly.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Here's something important that you'll want to put into your calendar.
The annual Cyber Symposium, Wednesday, November 1st through Friday, November 3rd, 2017. Brought to you by the National Cybersecurity Center. The annual Cyber Symposium is where elected officials and decision makers get the latest information on the key cyber issues of today. It's where they become better equipped to take action on the cybersecurity issues for your state, your city, and your company. RSVP now at www.cybersymposium.org. That's www.cybersymposium.org. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
So give us just a kind of a loop back understanding of what it is Department of Homeland Security does in the middle of the United States. And because I understand on the coasts, right? And what it is that the cyber department does exactly.
And so let me, I'll first talk to the critical infrastructure. So there's 16 different sectors that are critical infrastructure. And they come out with, there's a plan called the National Infrastructure Protection Plan, an NIPP. Mm-hmm. And the 16 critical infrastructures are chemical, commercial facilities, communications, critical manufacturing, dams, which we're interested here in this part of the country, defense industrial base, which Colorado Springs is very interested in, mm-hmm. Emergency services, energy, financial services, food and agriculture, government facilities, healthcare and public health, information technology, nuclear reactors, transportation, and then water and wastewater systems. So those are the critical infrastructures. Those critical infrastructures are throughout the nation, so not just mm-hmm. on the coast. Now, when you start looking at the scope of critical infrastructure, obviously we don't have any ports here. Mm-hmm. So we have pretty much, there's kind of almost a U-shape of critical infrastructure, you know, starting up in Seattle, coming down through Texas, and ending up, you know, in the New England area. That's where most of the critical infrastructure is. However, when you start looking at communications, you have major companies here that have fiber that connect from, you know, New York to LA and from Seattle to Miami. So that critical infrastructure obviously has to get from here to there. And then there's always the a number of pipelines, and since this part of the country has a lot of oil and gas, you got to move that from here to someplace else, and it either goes by truck or by rail or by mm-hmm. tube. So, you know, critical infrastructure is throughout the area here. Oh, by the way, we have lots of healthcare, life, limb, and economic impact components that the citizens of this region are interested in.
So all those critical infrastructures, the Department of Homeland Security makes sure that they're operational. And that's your objective?
And so I won't say operational, but that we look at it from a protection perspective.
Protection.
And so, in fact, there's, of the 16 critical infrastructures, 11 of them are the responsibility for DHS as far as providing levels of security. You know, obviously the Defense Industrial Base is, you know, Department of Defense, you know, Food and Agriculture is Department of Agriculture, Financial Services, Treasury, you know, Water and Wastewater is the EPA. So those, you know, it's segmented by function to a certain degree.
Mm-hmm. So now each one of those industries, state organizations, some involvement from the state, from the organizational standards bodies, how much does oversight and authority does DHS have versus the industry or the states that kind of sponsor those programs?
So most of the critical infrastructure is private. And so the programs that we provide when we start talking about cybersecurity here in a little bit are voluntary.
Okay. So they don't have to, it's not like you are the law and they have to do it. No. You help them, the private industry, to become more efficient, more effective.
Correct. We provide a number of different types of services that hopefully will increase the maturity of their security programs.
Okay.
And what types of things can you say that those are, or is that stuff
In fact, I can probably talk for the next 15, 20 minutes on that.
Well, let's give a short brief on what those cyber things are that you're providing.
And so what we basically utilize three other components. We have Carnegie Mellon and US CERT help us on maturity model reviews of the security programs of critical infrastructure. Mm-hmm. So you got critical infrastructure, and then you also have a thing called SLTT, which is state, local, tribal, and territorial. Mm-hmm. And so we provide a lot of support to the governments that sometimes are stretched thin on the cyber side of the house, specifically in skill sets and things like that. So we have Carnegie Mellon that provides some support for the resiliency models. We have Argonne Labs out of Chicago that assists us in a survey tool. And then we have Idaho Labs that helps us with ICS, which is industrial control systems. And so those three broad areas pretty much cover the gamut of cyber connectivity, information flows, items that are critical to the protection of the core business of most of the private organizations.
Okay, so you have a big picture of what's going on in cyber all over the country, all over the world. What do you think the current state is of our nation's protection in cybersecurity?
Well, so I think it's when we look at the adoption rates from. It took many, many years to adopt TV. Mm-hmm. It took many years to adopt color TV. It took, we're still in the process of, adopting computer systems and new technologies come out. So I think the whole overall technology will continue to change. So to answer your question, infancy. So currently we're in our infancy in adoption rate from a cybersecurity perspective. 15, 20 years ago, we were just adopting computers, and now we're heading into cybersecurity efforts. And now we have, the Internet of Things. Mm-hmm. And my term for that is the Internet of Threats. And so being a cyber guy. So it's a different T.
So Internet of Threats, Internet of Things is one of the biggest areas we have to worry about. What other areas would you say were at infancy? But there's some really things that we have to address. What would those be?
So I think when we start looking at things, so it kind of goes back to a certain degree to, awareness, education, and training. Mostly right now for users. Mm-hmm. A majority of the ways that malware gets into computers is through phishing and spear phishing campaigns where people click on things they shouldn't click on. Mm-hmm. So, every other weekend, I have a mother and a mother-in-law, and every other weekend I'm trading off on working on their computers because they just can't help but click. Mm-hmm. And so when we take a look at our current threat, a lot of that just is not being able to, just having some awareness at the user level in order to do that.
So how do you engage people for this training? Because I'm in training, I've been doing that for years, teaching, educating. And cybersecurity is one of those topics that people don't voluntarily line up to get training for. And I think that's a big problem why we have these threats are so easily come in, because people are just click, click, click. But how do we start to get people interested, the general population, into actually wanting to be knowledgeable in this area?
Well, I think it's a level of effort. Anyone that's been a victim of identity theft, oh, by the way, almost most people have. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could probably, I don't have the numbers, but you could, if you get in an auditorium and say, raise your hand, you see a significant number of people that had to restart their credit cards and get new ones. Mm-hmm. And so I think at some point in time, I think it's a personal impact on them gets them to move. Mm-hmm. And so if they've been out there and not being impacted, then they may not change their attitude. But as soon as they do, they pay more attention to password strength and clicking on things and talking to their kids, things like that. So at that level, I think that awareness is probably a personal awareness, and there's mm-hmm. only so much you can do. And I would say that there's also a cyber threat fatigue that's going on. We've been hearing cyber. 10 years ago, 15 years ago, one cyber wasn't the word. It was basically information security. And cyber now is so prevalent in the media that I think there is a lot better awareness than there was just a few years ago.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Over 3 million data breaches happen every single day. That's over 2,000 records being compromised every minute. So often, we focus on securing web data access. But what if the attackers are already inside, having gained direct access to your storage through data management software? When it comes to communications that go directly into your storage devices, make SNIA your first line of protection. SNIA's conformance testing limits outdated communications that are known to be used by attackers. It works continuously behind the background to make sure your storage is protected. To find out if your data is truly secure, visit our website at www.snia.org/cybertest.
So with the awareness of cyber, you said in the media, cybersecurity, a new term, information security, what would you define cybersecurity as? Well, what does the Department of Homeland Security define cybersecurity?
And so there's actually a definition I've seen that's adapted, and I'm just going to look through that real quickly. And it's basically any capability, whereas information communication systems and information containing that it needs to be protected from damage, unauthorized use, or modification, or exploitation.
Very information focused. Still.
Information focused. So when you look at it, there's basically four components that we start looking at from a maturity perspective, mm-hmm. and that's people, technology, the information itself, and the facilities. So when we do a number of our assessments, a lot of our focus is in those primary areas. And from that, then we get a kind of a maturity rating on a scale of 1 to 5 mm-hmm. that shows how that particular organization compares to an anonymized group that we've already looked at, and basically give them a low, medium, and high rating in a variety of those areas.
Yeah. So, and the reason why I asked that is I've asked this question to many people. One of the gentlemen spoke from Carnegie Mellon, was talking all about information. Cybersecurity is about securing information. My background, nuclear engineering, critical infrastructure, industrial automation, and then designing those type of pieces of equipment to go into there, and the networks and the communication. And, for years I had worked in what is now part of cybersecurity that was just mine safety and factory control and automation back in the day. And the first time I really got involved with standards organization, they were all talking about data and information security. And I was like, I was confused at first because we didn't care about the data. In a whole industry of automation, we transfer the same command 1 million times over 10 years and a human never looks at it. What was so important about that data was confusing to me. So if you look at then the whole paradigm of IoT, critical infrastructure that's electrical, bridges, railroads, lights, that are all those machine-to-machines talking, is information security really the biggest focus? Because on that side, it seemed to be trust and the trusted connection between the two, and information was an irrelevant piece of the equation.
And so I think I'm going to pick up on your standards component okay. to that question. And that experience is in order to have repeatable processes and capabilities, you have to have somewhat of a standard way of doing business across the infrastructure, since everything is interconnected, and, mm-hmm. and unless you have it. So one of the things that we're currently looking at is the cybersecurity framework, which utilizes a variety of different types of NIST, so National Infrastructure
Institute of Standards and Technology.
Exactly. So there's the capability. There's 800 series that's out there that implement controls,
which is just a list of everything that people should be looking at in cybersecurity.
Correct.
Yes.
And so in that, what's happened over the last few years is we have a number of other standards out there. There's ISO 27001 standards. There's the SANS Top 20. Mm-hmm. There's a variety of different standards out there. The problem with standards is there are too many of them.
Yes. So, I remember seeing an 8,000 line item spreadsheet mm-hmm. with all the standards on.
So what DHS has done is to adopt and take a look at the cybersecurity framework, how it's working with the NIST 800 series controls, mm-hmm. and basically pushing that out and saying, here's at least a framework for those that have not adopted a framework, and there's a number of crosswalks that will crosswalk between these other standards and mm-hmm. the NIST framework. The thing that I want to talk to real briefly is the framework major functions are identify, protect, detect, respond, and recover. And when I look at the identify and protect, that's kind of the requirement for us to have antivirus. Mm-hmm. Though you have antivirus, you're not completely safe. Mm-hmm. That's just that it's a requirement. You need it. So what the kind of state of the market currently, and I think it's getting back to your question, kind of a
big loop. I'll bear with you here.
Big loop. So that we're at right now the detect and respond side of the house. So when we start talking about detect, that's some of the, I think one of the major companies that just put out a report, and it said it takes about 200 days for someone to know that they've got somebody in their network. And so then the question is okay, detect could also be the same thing as hunting. And so mm-hmm. right now the state of affairs is that we're hunting for people that are in our networks. And a variety of different large, leadership people over the years have said, hey, just assume that you've been hacked and they're in your network. Mm-hmm. So now what we're trying to do is to hunt them down and to reduce the latency between detecting them and responding to that. And
okay.
So utilizing on the response side, instant response controls and programs that you put in place based on this framework in order to hunt them down and eradicate them from your network.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I think, to a certain degree, the standards portion that you asked.
Okay.
I think we got there an explanation. I think probably to elaborate on my question, my question revolved around if there's so many IoT and embedded devices out there, and we're looking at information as the primary thing we're tracking down and tracing. Do we maybe have a different direction to look at that might be more effective than just chasing information?
So you could head down the path of regulation and say that all these IoT devices need to have a modicum of security associated with them.
Mm-hmm.
My guess is that adding more regulation at this point in time is not there.
And I saw that with NERC-SIP. It was just there's more exceptions filed and more time with just trying to define what the context of the requirement was than actually getting any productive work done in cyber for those companies.
Yeah, correct. So I don't think I think what will happen is that industry itself will pick up the model of what does the consumer want? Mm-hmm. Well, the consumer wants capabilities out there, Shodan and a few things like that, that goes out and searches for, unsecure devices. So if a company's device shows up on Shodan and is unsecure, and through awareness and education and training, the consumer is able to see some of this, then they're not going to buy that device. So I think market forces will force a lot of the IoT organizations and private sector companies to start embedding and increasing their cybersecurity.
So do you think there's an overarching framework standard that could encompass all that, though?
I'm not sure that I think there's best practices, or in the case and everything, it's actually the term is changing now from best practices to leading practices.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, there is no one best practice. So there are things you can do to, you know, better protect yourself, but not everyone is going to be a computer science person and be able to do that in the home. So I think the companies will adapt and will make it easier. Ease of use has always been a definition or a defined capability for a product. So I think that'll be out there, and I think the companies through technology will eventually be able to keep the malware at bay for a while. But it's an arms race. It's not static.
Okay. So a little bit different direction here. You brought out the new framework you have out. Worked a lot. There's a lot of military in Colorado Springs, so you hear a lot from the agencies here about risk management framework, which is the DOD's effort. And from what I see, the different organizations that are within our own government are kind of going their own direction and developing entire frameworks that under the DOD there's one, under DHS there's another, under DOE there's a whole different set with the NERC-SIP. How do we start to pull all those together, and how do you think that originally or eventually pans out?
So to a certain degree, so there's been DITSCAP, and I don't ask me the thing, and DICAP, which were the frameworks that were security frameworks for.
And risk management, I think, is the next version of that.
But they were also, I think, from a DOD perspective, I'll have to validate this, but I think they were also looking at the NIST 800 series controls as a basis. So here's the bottom line, though. Okay, if you all the control models basically say, okay, you need a firewall. Okay, well, they're in each one. You know, where is the firewall? It's over there. Is it turned on? I mean, so they, each one of these frameworks, when you back them up, just change the vernacular a little bit, but they have the same intended results.
So your thought is pick one. Doesn't matter. Follow one, you'll get to the same place.
I would say yes. You know, you probably need to do a little research. You know, ask some people in the field. There may be some that are more, applicable to your particular organization and your business mission.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one is just plain old ROI. Just return on investment. How much is it going to cost us in order to implement a specific framework? Okay. And what's the value add if we?
Okay. Well, it's great overview of your programs and what you're doing. How about we have a lot of efforts going on in Colorado for cybersecurity. What kind of recommendations do you make from the Department of Homeland Security about how to maybe pull these things together and make them more effective?
So there's a number of initiatives that are ongoing by the state itself. So the state itself has a thing called the CIAC, which is the Colorado Information Analysis Center.
Mm-hmm.
And that also has some cyber security capabilities. About four plus years ago, we were able to, I had some other jobs, but you had five people that were hired, and they are interfacing and actually sitting with the FBI and the cyber security task force that the FBI has. So there is some prosecuting capabilities that are available on that side of the house. So that's some of the state stuff. I know that locally here you have an NCC that's being stood up that's, you know, looking at providing information and support to, you know, senior leadership in companies and government, as well as doing some threat analysis capabilities, and then providing for the, you know, awareness training and education of future cyber warriors.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a variety of efforts ongoing. Additionally, and everything, just attended here a couple weeks ago at Regis University, the combined state, Colorado National, actually several National Guards from other states, and they did a cybersecurity exercise utilized on ICS systems for dams.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they will, you know, that's a continued effort. So there's a variety of different ongoing cybersecurity initiatives. One of the other initiatives locally was there's things called ISOWs. And so ISOWs are information sharing and analysis organizations
mm-hmm.
that are basically grassroots organizations that start to share. They're non-governmental, they start sharing cyber information among themselves. One of the most recent ones was the sports ISOW that took a look at some of the past Olympic efforts we had here last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I know the same group is also working on a project for Department of Homeland Security. Is that something that you can elaborate on?
And actually, that'll be probably another session, and I don't have that much insight into that current operation.
Okay. I think that's something down the road we just saw a couple press releases on it.
Yes.
That might be really exciting about how the Department of Homeland Security can organize ISOWs all across the United States.
Yeah, and when we say I think the Homeland Security is pretty much in the support side of the house. It's
mm-hmm.
gonna, you know, there may be some types of grant funding out there, but I would say that most of it is. There's a recognized need, and a group of organizations and or people get together and try and provide a solution to those particular needs.
Okay. So, and I always have to ask, lots of students looking to know what career to pick, how to get into the workforce. What types of needs do you have and can you see coming down the road for DHS, for cybersecurity, for the future workforce? What do you need?
So, obviously, we have this. We're in a competition with private sector
mm-hmm.
right now, and so what tends to happen, or what has happened in the past, is a number of entry level people come into a government, not just DHS. This is any government, and they will get some training, will head through the process, and then they get a bigger paycheck from external sources. And they're gone, and you kind of have to start over. So
mm-hmm.
I know this has been a problem at local government, at state government, and at federal government. And so from a need perspective, I can't predict that. I mean, the answer is for them to be aware of the current capabilities that are out there, to train and get experience. Experience is kind of the critical factor.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, you know, when the education systems are trying to train people, I'd almost look at, to a certain degree, almost the old VOTEC model to a certain degree, vocational tech training. But, I mean, the education systems probably need to coordinate locally or coordinate with, companies that are in need of these services and match the curriculum to meet those needs.
Do you have any skills that you see are the most valuable with DHS right now?
No, I mean, we're huge. So, I mean, it's all skills.
Okay.
I mean, I think across the board, there is a need for all skill. If you're good at any one skill, you're going to be successful.
Well, that's
and so
good.
Pick, to hear.
Pick
a skill, and if you're at the top 10%, well, obviously, there's going to be a need for you. Now, what skills and what's the volume for people? I mean, you always need good systems administrators. You need, firewall guys that are able to, do firewall rules,
mm-hmm.
Networking, obviously. So all of those types of skills are going to be in need.
Okay. So kind of just in closing here, is there anything that anybody listening that wants to get involved with the DHS or you need to reach out to people and say, hey, we want people to start getting involved with these type of things?
So I guess, what's that?
What would those be?
I would think that, one, you can always go, look, there's going to be job. Right now we're currently under a hiring freeze.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a CR, which is a continuing resolution that's going through April. And so from a budgetary perspective, just keep your ear to the ground for when that releases. And then also take a look at, I believe it's USA Jobs. It has a lot of postings.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to take a look at some of the things that we are trying to show on a voluntary basis, it would be to go to a website, which is uscert.gov/CCUBEDVP. And that'll give you a variety of different resources to improve what we're looking at from assessments. And if you start looking at some of those areas, you may be able to then interpolate that to how you would like to provide your services to DHS.
Okay. Well, thanks for joining today, and we appreciate your time that you spent, and definitely great information, and we always look to hear from our government agencies about what we can be involved with. All right. Thanks. Have a great day.
Here's something important that you'll want to put into your calendar. The annual Cyber Symposium, Wednesday, November 1st through Friday, November 3rd, 2017. Brought to you by the National Cybersecurity Center. The annual Cyber Symposium is where elected officials and decision makers get the latest information on the key cyber issues of today. It's where they become better equipped to take action on the cybersecurity issues for your state, your city, and your company. RSVP now at www.cybersymposium.org. That's www.cybersymposium.org.
The views or opinions expressed by me during this podcast are my own and are not those of my employer, Colorado Technical University.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember to get involved. Often we think that someone else will handle privacy and security in the virtual world, but you are the only one truly in command of your virtual fate. Join our mailing list so we can keep you informed of breaking news and new releases. If you have an idea, if you have a question that you would like to hear answered, or if you want to get involved with our efforts, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, as they are the ones that really make this show possible. I want to thank each of you for supporting the show, and we look forward to seeing you back for the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.